Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
We are starting a new study, and I've entitled it Liberalism, the New Improved Broad Road to Destruction. And this study is going to cover several weeks, as I'm going to go into a great deal of depth concerning the direction that liberalism is moving in general. Liberalism has become a very widespread problem that has and is attacking several essentials of our faith. I have an article from the local newspaper here, and this article, I looked at it and I said, you know what, there are signs of liberalism everywhere. Even on literal church signs, because that's what this article was about. And in fact, my own church had a couple of photographs in the article of clever quotes that were put on our church sign. And but, you know, the discussion in the article also moves to churches that I would say would be certainly considered liberal. There are universal messages. E.E. Cummings is a good source, and author Anne Lamott. I'll quote Gandhi if the sentiment fits, said Linda Parker, pastor at Eastside Christian Church. I always choose sayings that reflect our beliefs here at her church, where she's pastoring. I won't put up anything controversial. We do not preach much about hell, so it is not likely that I would ever put up a sign warning people. Yes, don't want to preach about something controversial, even though the Bible speaks a whole lot about hell and how not to end up arriving there. That's what my comment would be on that. So there's a sign of liberalism in one of the local churches in my area. Now, why is a study of liberalism important concerning matters about the great apostasy, which we've been speaking of in earlier series, and prophetic truth? Well, because it plays a big role in building the foundation for the apostasy. Now, I have collected over the years a lot of different information, research and reference tools, and different things that I use in my talks. So this is really kind of like old news considering the direction of the apostasy is taking and how liberalism is steering much of the professing church. But this article is entitled, Living in Sin is No Longer a Sin. A Church of England report says, living in sin should no longer be regarded as sinful, and the phrase should be dropped given the number of people who now live together before getting married, a Church of England report said Tuesday. The phrase living in sin stigmatizes and isn't helpful. The report also urged a ready welcome for homosexuals in the church, saying many have high-quality, loving relationships. And then I have another article. And of course, there are countless articles, and again, old news here, because we're in really bad shape at this point in time. But this is what has been taking place over the years. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America decided to undertake its first major study about whether to endorse the morality of homosexual relationships. The study will include an examination of whether the church should accept gay and lesbian clergy who refuse to take a vow of celibacy. Now, liberalism is doing a great damage politically in our society here in America, and it goes hand in hand with its spiritual counterpart, but we will be looking mainly at the spiritual damage it is doing in the church and to our culture. It is a prevalent movement that is a big part of the effort to reinvent and redefine true biblical Christianity that I touched on in my earlier Watchmen on the Wall series. Now, I went to a conference years ago in Dallas that was dealing with and addressing the problems of the evangelical and Catholics together compromise, and the church where the conference was taking place had a free booklet, and the title of it was The Redefining of a Christian, and I referenced that in my other series. But these people were seeing the effects even then of what was taking place in the church. And then I also mentioned in my last series an article that was in Israel My Glory magazine, which is an excellent magazine in my opinion. And in page 14, the article, The Push to Reinvent Christianity, and the push to reinvent the gospel. In this article, which I would like to make some quotes, take some quotes, give some quotes from, is an excellent article, because it really has, the author has his hand on the pulse of what's going on, even back when this article was written a few years ago, in 2012. This is from the July-August issue, by the way, of Israel My Glory magazine. More and more pastors have turned into a new way of doing church, convincing their congregations this approach will open the way for an exciting spiritual adventure into new territory and new ways of believing, belonging, and becoming, according to the inside cover of one of the emergent church leader Brian McLaren's books. Of course, the emergent church is another name for one of the tentacles of liberalism, and I'll get into more detail further on in the series. If we have a new world, wrote McLaren, we will need a new church, a new framework for our theology, a new spirituality. He goes on to say, McLaren's book, A New Christianity, is actually promoted as one that takes aim at some core doctrinal beliefs. In his book, Finding Faith, another of his books, he contended that chapter two considers and rejects the religious claim that the Bible or some other document can provide certainty. Alan Jones, another prominent figure in the movement to reimagine Christianity, agreed. He is a former dean of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, which, by the way, is where the Reverend Bishop Pike was associated. And this man, of course, ended up getting deep into liberalism, and I will go into more about him when I do my series on Spiritism. But he ended up trying to get in contact with his son from the other side, who had died from an overdose of drugs, I believe. But anyway, he was associated with Grace Cathedral, a very liberal church where I have visited. And Jones believes the Bible should be read as allegory and metaphor, not as literal truth. We can get to the truth only through inference, through myth and poetry, through metaphor and storytelling. There is no such thing as what really happened. Not surprisingly, McLaren stated much the same thing. No articulation of the gospel today can presume to be exactly identical to the original meaning proclaimed by Christ and the apostles. The attempt to reinvent Christianity necessarily involves reinterpreting the unique biblical message of salvation through faith in Jesus Christ alone, and undermines the gospel's distinctive nature. Often it involves syncretism, combining Christianity with something else. Rob Bell, founding pastor and pastor emeritus of Mars Hill Bible Church in Michigan, does that very thing. Jesus, he said, is bigger than any one religion. He will only transcend whatever cages and labels are created to contain and name him, especially the one called Christianity. In Bell's controversial book, Love Wins, which denies the existence of eternal punishment, he twisted the interpretation of one of the most well-known New Testament verses until it was barely recognizable, suggesting good people from across the cultural spectrum, religions of the world, ultimately will enjoy the benefits of salvation without even knowing that they are coming exclusively through him, Jesus. But Jesus' words are straightforward. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's John 14:6. Furthermore, the Bible teaches that salvation is experienced by individuals who, by decisive acts of the will, have placed their faith in Jesus Christ and in his sacrifice at Calvary. After deriding an exclusive view of salvation, where you're either in or you're going to hell, Bell presented an inclusive alternative. As long as your heart is fine, or your actions measure up, you'll be okay. I guess that's according to First Bell. Anyway, salvation is through Jesus Christ, according to the article, and his sacrifice alone. Peter declared, nor is there salvation in any other, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. The article goes on in the next section, says, welcome to universalism. And we will be spending a lot of time looking at one of these key beliefs of liberalism, all the way back from church history, from early church history to the future. But we will look now and see in this article what he says here. He says, when you distort salvation, by the way, Charles McCracken is the author of this article. It says, when you distort salvation, it naturally follows that you minimize or altogether discount the consequences of rejecting that salvation. Bell ridicules the notion of hell and relegates the subject to a public relations problem. If your God will punish people for all of eternity for sins committed in a few short years, no amount of clever marketing or compelling language or good music or great coffee will be able to disguise that one true, glaring, untenable, unacceptable, awful reality. Expanding on his position, he clarified, many people find Jesus compelling, but don't follow him because of the parts about hell and torment and all that. Somewhere along the way, they were taught that the only option when it comes to Christian faith is to clearly declare that a few committed Christians will go to heaven when they die, and everyone else will not. The matter is settled at death, and that's it. One place or the other, no looking back, no chance for a change of heart. Make your bed now and lie in it forever. Not all Christians have believed this, and you don't have to believe it to be a Christian, according to First Bell. That's my comments I'm adding. McLaren, who has defended Bell's book, sympathizes. It's very hard to square the idea of eternal conscious torment with a just or holy God. Never mind that the Bible states, according to this article, it is appointed for men to die once, but after this the judgment. And that's Hebrews 9:27, somewhat of a definitive verse concerning eternal separation from God. God's word clearly correlates the consequences of sin with the purpose for Christ's substitutionary death as a sacrifice for sin. It also leaves no room for debate. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. Now, I would like to mention at this time that there's an excellent definition, and I'm going to get to that in just a second. First of all, I almost forgot to mention that in my other series, which was an article I read from called Heresies, Then and Now, How the Ancient Christological Heresies Continue to Attack the Person and Work of Christ, I was commenting on how Satan tries to rehash and bring about, rework his old heresies into a modern, acceptable form in whatever age he's working in. In our age, he's still using what is known as universalism, as that article was discussing. Now, from that article, and I want to reread, really the origin of this particular tenet of liberalism came from a man named Origen, who's considered one of the early church fathers, who did as much probably to bring heresy into the church as he did to fight other heresies. It says in this article, despite his defense of orthodoxy, Origen developed several heretical doctrines that were eventually condemned in 553. His most notable deviant teaching involves the preexistence of human souls, the subordination of the Son to the Father, and universalism. So there again, you want to look for the origin of one of the biggest tenets of modern-day liberalism. You can go all the way back to early church history and this man Origen and his responsibilities that he bears for helping to promote this. Now, Erwin Lutzer wrote a book called 1 Minute After You Die. And in that book, on page 103, he gives a definition of universalism. He says, universalism is the name given to the belief that eventually all men will arrive safely to heaven. Since Christ died for all people without exception, it follows, they say, that all will eventually be saved. God will overcome every remnant of evil, and all rational creatures, some would even include Satan, will eventually be redeemed. And then on page 105, he makes this statement. Universalism has never been widely accepted by those who take the scriptures seriously. Obviously, if this teaching were true, there would be no pressing reason to fulfill the Great Commission or to urge unbelievers to accept Christ in this life. So Christ's call for us to fulfill his Great Commission, well, there would have been no need for that if universalism is true. Now, there are many examples that I want to bring of this particular false teaching universalism, but I want to mention right off the top that there's a whole, what they call a church, which is really actually a cult, that's known as Unitarian universalism. And this group, really, I would say it has the best, or if you will, the worst of both worlds in its title. Unitarian, which means they do not accept the triune God, that God is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in one. They let you know right away they're Unitarian, but secondarily, they want you to know that they are Universalists, and therefore you have the name Unitarian Universalists. We actually have one right down the street from where we live, and they are only one, they're just one manifestation of liberalism. They are very much committed to having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, as we're told in the New Testament in Timothy, that many would have. Now, I would like to comment on some of the popular personalities that are promoting universalism. Not all, of course. This is not an exhaustive list. But this is a few of the people who you may recognize some of their names and some of their misdeeds. We have one gentleman, his name is Carlton Pearson. For those of you who have followed the folly of TBN Network, you will remember that Bishop Carlton Pearson was really the darling of TBN. He was a singer. He also had a large church in Tulsa, where I lived for about 6 years. In fact, it was right down the street from where I lived. Well, it pretty much dwindled to nothing after Carlton decided to accept universalism as a guiding tenet of his life. He's still around, of course, but to show you where liberalism can take you, I mean, it can take you to hell all by itself. But when I was up in Unity Village, which is a suburb of Kansas City, and which is the really the world headquarters for the Unity School of Christianity cult, which is now known as Unity. Whenever I would go through Kansas City, I would always make it a point to visit there and some of the other large cult headquarters that are there. Certain Mormon groups are there that I always visit as well. But this particular group is what we call a neo-Gnostic cult, or a mind science cult. And they, as I say, they've changed their name to Unity now. And while I was there visiting, I noticed a flyer up on the wall that was, it said the United Centers for Spiritual Living, the 2008 Annual Community Gathering. So this was an annual conference or such that they were having in Kansas City. And some of the contributors were Dr. Kathy Hearn, who I was not familiar with, Dr. Gary Simmons, also, he was the Association of Unity Churches International, Dr. Ivana Van Zant, the founder of Inner Visions Institute, and then Bishop Carlton Pearson, the senior pastor of the New Dimensions Worship Center. New Dimensions indeed, my friends. This is where liberalism can take you, being hand-in-hand with Gnostics or Neo-Gnostics at the Unity School of Christianity. Now, we should pray for this man, of course, in the hopes that if he ever truly knew the Lord, he might return. And then, of course, one man that we've already mentioned, who's infamous for his beliefs of universalism, I like to call him Rob Noel Bell. He's a graduate of Fuller Seminary, which is strike one. if you know how I feel about Fuller Seminary, it's one of the most liberal disgraces, really, a formerly evangelical seminary. They may still use the term, but they have promoted more false teaching and heresies come out of there than just about any place I can think of that claims to be evangelical. And he's what is known as an emergent church leader. That's strike two. And then, of course, I think he really hit the big time when he became an Oprah Winfrey alumni. Strike three. He was one of several so-called Christian ministers who's appeared on Oprah for apparently the purpose of finding common ground with Oprah, who has done more to promote New Age spirituality, or what they call is the new spirituality, which is pure heresy and pure evil, really, than just about anybody. And Rob and several others, and I won't go take the time now to mention some of these other pastors. Some of you know about this, and this has been a few years ago. But anyway, former Fuller grad, emergent leader, and an Oprah alumni. I would say strike the threes out, but once again, we should pray for Rob Bell. God is a gracious, loving, forgiving God, and this heretical man might still be delivered. Now, another individual who I was really saddened, of course, when I heard that he had gone off the rails. And before I get to his name, though, I want to mention a man who hasn't gone off the rails, who is an excellent pastor, I believe, and he's written good books and used to have a printed newsletter called Think on These Things. I think he no longer is putting that out, but you can go to his website, and he has excellent book reviews and information from his old newsletters, and I'm sure new information. He's on the cutting edge of fighting so many of the things that are taking place. Now, in this particular June and July issue 2011 of Think on These Things, Gary Gilley, and I think I may not have mentioned his name, I hope I have, but anyway, I did now, he has an article called Love Wins, Universalism's New Champion. And of course, it's an expose of Rob Bell's book when it first came out, or around the time it came out. And at the end, though, of this article, this is where I was saddened to hear, in the conclusion, he mentions John Stott, John R.W. Stott. And I remember as a young Christian, I read a couple of his books that were really helpful to me. And I'm trying to remember the name of them. I think it was Basic Christianity. Yes, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. That was one of them. Your Mind Matters was another great book he wrote. But anyway, Gary Gilley quotes him as saying, concerning eternal hell, "Emotionally, I find the concept intolerable and do not understand how people can live with it without either cauterizing their feelings or cracking under the strain." Gary Gilley says, "I understand how Stott feels, as I do. When C.S. Lewis writes, I would pay any price to be able to say truthfully, all will be saved. However, it is not for the servant of Christ to go beyond the master's will and teach that which he does not teach." Unfortunately, John Stott, before he passed away, began to become a champion, I suppose, of universalism. At the very least, he denounced the belief in eternal hell, separation from God, which was a very sad time, if you're familiar with John Stott. Some people still recommend his materials because his earlier works were good and still helpful. But towards the end, he really blew it. Now, finally, probably one of the most effective proponents of universalism, among other heresies, has been the man William Young, who wrote the book The Shack. You've probably heard of The Shack. It'd be hard not to have heard of this fictional book, which was self-published because no publishers would touch it because of all the bad theology in it, which almost surprises me at this point in time because there's so many publishing houses which are owned by secular companies and are more concerned about the bottom line, I think, than they are correct theology. Or biblical soundness. But at the time, from what I understand, most publishers would not touch this book. Maybe there was just too much bad theology for them to feel like they could get away with passing this thing off. So he self-published it. And boy, did it take off. And people just gobbling it up like pancakes with lots of syrup. It's a fictional book. And, well, I'll hold that thought. We probably won't be able to get through all I want to say about The Shack, but I bring it up because it is one of the driving forces of universalism, the belief in universalism. When I was in Tulsa, the little Bible church that I went to bought into it. The pastor was a well-trained Bible teacher with multiple degrees, including Dallas Seminary. But he had compromised in not speaking out concerning those in the church who liked it, including his wife, including one of his best friends. And, I won't go there, but it was very unfortunate, as he had actually asked me to come to the church and teach a class on cults, which I did for quite some time, for a couple of years, But there were certain beliefs that it didn't really say it matter what I said. They had itching ears for certain of these beliefs. Now, in the August 2009 issue of The Brian Call, T.A. McMahon, who took Dave Hunt's place as the head of this ministry, they did one of their newsletters they did on exclusively on the Shack. And at the top bar, the top bar, before you start reading the article, this is what's written. Reimagining, reinventing, re-innovating, repainting, recreating God. Remember when I started at the beginning of how liberalism is seeking to reinvent and redefine biblical Christianity? Well, that little prefix, re, is being used so much now by people in the liberal lifestyle and in the liberal beliefs, let's say. This reminds me a great deal of Robert Schuller, who was planning this Rethink conference, in which he had several emerging church leaders. Rick Warren's wife, Kay Warren, was to be a speaker. And, you know, his usual host of unsaved celebrities, as well as a few Christian leaders who you had to ask yourself, why would they be going there? Where is their discernment? But anyway, all of this is a good example, just of like what I was saying a minute ago, of seeking to reinvent and redefine biblical Christianity. Now, many articles came out on the Shack debunking it, and I'm going to mention those in passing before I get into the, because I'm not going to have time really to get into the article that I want to read from the Berean Call newsletter. But let me just say that if you want to find out more about the Shack, I realize this is old news to many of you, but there are some good, very good reviews and articles. One of them was called The Shack, Helpful or Heretical? A critical review by Norman Geisler and Bill Roach. Another one was called 13 Heresies in the Shack by Dr. Michael Youssef. I was just watching him last night, and I was reminded of this article, so I dug it up out of my files and brought it up because I wanted to remember to mention that. Of course, the Lighthouse Trails Research Publishing Company, on their blog, they do great work exposing error and heresy that is popular in our culture at this time. And they wrote a lot about the Shack, of course. So there are many who have, and I'm going to be quoting several things, including from an article, a transcript of an interview with William Young, exposing firsthand, right out of the horse's mouth, or right out of the heretic's mouth, some of his beliefs, or non-beliefs, I suppose, including universalism. But we will save all that for our next time together, as I am running out of time.